the Student Affairs Committee and Regent Dennison.
Now we get to the fun stuff. So Dr. Sales cannot be here today, but she has got slides, I think, ready and presenters ready. The topic is the Opportunity Fund, which has come up a lot in our strategic plan meeting, so I'm really excited to learn about that. So Emily, are you the one that's going to present? And then I think Bryson is going to maybe add to this, and then we've got some students that I'm excited to hear from. So let us know everything about the Opportunity Fund.
All right, well, good morning, everyone. My name is Emmeline Essler. I'm the Student Success Coordinator and Student Ombuds Officer, and I work out of the Office of the Dean of Students. And I have the pleasure this morning of sharing a little bit about the Opportunity Fund and then introducing you to the real stars of the show, our students.
So the WPU Opportunity Fund has helped our students in ways that now that I became the Director of Student Financial Assistance, the university had limited resources and wanted to help students with one-time needs. So we scholarship students, as we always had, and so forth, but we were running into more and more situations where students needed help with a final semester. They had exhausted all of the resources. They may have needed $500 to finish up. They may have a semester where they're running short and they just can't pay the rent. So in all of those different situations where we have those...
Why don't you come in the middle? We'll have a chance of hearing you, maybe.
And my voice, unless I'm singing, my voice doesn't carry for some reason. But I won't sing at you, I promise. So from the time that I became the Director of Student Financial Assistance, we were seeing more and more students that had needs that we were not able to meet through standard scholarshiping procedures and processes that we had through the foundation resources that were available. State resources were at times limited back then, and of course federal resources, same thing with that. Student loans, we have a lot of students that are averse to student loans and so forth, and of course we guide through that and counsel. But we had more and more situations where students would be coming into us. And, of course, through the Dean of Students' Office, they come to the deans, whoever they're comfortable speaking with at the time. Everyone's situation is a little bit different, and they have that comfort level with different individuals. So from there, they would bring those needs to those individuals. It could be that, you know, they may not be able to pay rent for that month. Something may have happened. They had unexpected expenses. Instead of dropping out from the institution and not finishing that semester so that they could go to work and actually be able to pay their expenses, we needed some resources to be able to help with those type of things. Also, students were running into, say, that last semester they may have exhausted those resources that they had available to them throughout the other semesters that they had been here. And in order to help them with a completion grant, essentially, the WKU Opportunity Fund steps in with that. So Through the funds that had been raised for the Opportunity Fund, those are helping us to help those students to remove the barriers that those students had in a lot of those emergency situations and so forth. The deans reach out to us. Emmeline and I work together a lot of times to help make sure that those students have what they need from those funds. So all of the work that has been going into the WKU Opportunity Fund over the last several years, I see daily what good that is doing. And we have some students here for you. So you've heard probably enough from me about that. And, of course, the figures are all out there as far as how much has been raised and how much that we help with annually. And thousands of students at this point now have been assisted through the WKU Opportunity Fund in a lot of different ways. So I think Emmeline has about three different student situations and scenarios that we're going to share with you to let you know kind of firsthand what these students, how they benefited.
So, Dr. Cavone, this was part of your inauguration speech, I think.
It was indeed one of the four things I've announced.
Numbers.
Well, the initial goal, some of you have heard this story before.
Right.
Casey had gone around campus and was visiting with students and saw a great need for supporting young people. And again, their success and getting to graduation, not just in the front door. And one of the things that she's came to me and said, I think we can raise some money to help these young people. She's like, I'd like to raise $5 million. So about a week later over dinner, I said, well, you know that opportunity fund idea? And she's like, yeah. I said, well, we should do it. Except the goal should be $50 million. And we set a goal, $50 million over 5 years. And we reached $50 million in about 2.5. And so, as I am wont to do, I said, well, let's just double it then and raise $100 million, which we did in 5 years. And what you see is the effect that those gifts and that fundraising effort has had. And so my thanks, all of our thanks to Casey, to the fundraising team, to Bryson, and to Student Affairs and Student Life, and for all of us for using this as an intervention to create more student success, which is everything we've been talking about as an institution for the past 8.5 years. Thank you for remembering.
$100 million, a lot of money. So do you take, do you do what the foundation does and figure we got $4 million a year to spend or five or?
Yes, the funds are managed through the foundation. So we have, for instance, last year it was around $7 million that we were able to help students. And on average, it was around $2,300 per student. Some students had to have a little bit more, others didn't need quite as much. But we try to maximize on the use of those funds to make them go as far as we possibly can to help as many students as we can.
So the very first student I would like to present is Miss Talia Guest. She is a senior here getting her bachelor's in corporate and organizational communication within the Potter College of Arts and Letters.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Talia Guest, as she mentioned. I am a corporate and organizational communication major. I have a minor in psychology and a certificate in strategic communication. Receiving this opportunity fund really did help with me getting to the finish line. I will be graduating in May, and so I would like to continue my education and getting a master's in student affairs. And so when I saw my tuition bill, I was like, wow. So I took out the loans, I took out the extra resources, I went to Dr. Sales, I went to MLON, I even went up to financial aid. I feel like they know me at this point, they know my name, they're like, oh, here she goes. But I also work on campus. I work at the Alumni Center, and I also work for Trio SSS as a peer success coach. And so I was just thinking of like different avenues on what I can do, and I was running out of Pell Grant and CAP Grant. I transferred to WKU back in August of 2023. I did get my associate's degree at Jefferson County, at JCTC in Louisville, Kentucky. And so I was running out of Pell Grant and CAP Grant money. And so when MLON told me about the Opportunity Fund, I was like, okay, let's just try it out. Hopefully I can get it. And so that really did help with me continuing my education because I felt that I would have to drop out, even though I have came so far. And I would like to continue my education and getting my master's within the following year. So thank you to the Board of Regents, and thank you to the Opportunity Fund. Thank you.
Our next two students were not available to be here in person today, but they really wanted to share their story. So Caspian Love Lady provided a written statement, and Barry Coxon provided a video that we will show next. So Caspian Love Lady is a junior getting their Bachelor of Interdisciplinary Studies through the College of Education and Behavioral Sciences. And Caspian writes, when you think of funding, what comes to mind? Most think of family, but what happens for the students who are like me and have no family? Have no one to turn to when you need them the most. Have to only depend on myself and the kindness of others, or in my case, my school. The Opportunity Fund helped me more than I can ever express. I remember being in the Dean of Students' office in tears, terrified I wasn't going to be able to register for classes in the spring, and therefore would have no place to go. After leaving the office that day, not only was I giving breathing techniques and taught coping skills to make sure I could calm down. But I was also given a chance to continue my education. When I received the email informing me of what I had received, I was absolutely ecstatic. I was so hopeful that my dreams could come true. My dreams of a stable life, surrounded and supported by those I made my family. The Opportunity Fund, it helped me remain confident in myself and feel supported by my school, a school who wants to see someone like me succeed. I cannot express how grateful I am. Thank you. Our very last student is Barry Coxham. Barry is a senior getting his Bachelor of Interdisciplinary Studies through the College of Education and Behavioral Sciences.
Good morning. My name is Barry Coxham. I am a proud student at Western Kentucky University. I am also a first-generation Black African-American college student. Going to college was not only a personal dream of mine, but it was also a dream that held the hope, sacrifice, and prayers of my family. Going to college was also a dream that held uncertainties, especially when it came to financial issues. Getting the Opportunity Funding Award meant more to me than just getting money to go to school. It meant I can focus on my education, my growth, and my future instead of worrying about how I was going to stay in school. This award reminded me that I am not alone, that someone believes in me, has invested in me, and sees the potential in me, even when I am still discovering it for myself. As a first-generation student, there is no guidebook. Every step of the way is uncharted territory. However, this scholarship has become a part of my foundation. It has encouraged me to work even harder, to be dedicated, and to move for the purpose. It has also reminded me that I am not only here for myself, but I am here to open doors for others who will come after me. This scholarship also means that I know that this is an investment that will change my life, but is also an opportunity to help me achieve my goals and move forward as a leader and have hope in the fact that my past will not hold me back in the future. I would like to take the opportunity to give a sincere thank you for investing in students such as myself. Your help is changing lives, building possibilities, and giving us a bright future. I do not have the words to express how grateful I am for your help, and I just hope that one day I will be able to give someone the same help as I got. Thank you so much for listening.
I am so very grateful that I'm so very blessed and grateful to be able to work with these amazing people on a daily basis. It is amazing to be able to help students who are experiencing an emergency situation and not say, well, we'll wait and see what happens next week. So to be able to put these resources in their hands immediately makes a huge impact in their lives. So I wanted to see if y'all have any questions.
Oh, yes. So, Talia.
Yes.
I'm so ready. You talked about you were at a community college and then yes. You came here.
Yes.
And so the Pell Grant and CAP grants, are they, did you max those out? And when you came here, you could not use those anymore?
So I did kind of max it out. Like I had a $3,000 or $4,000 bill, and I was like, okay, you know, I have to register for classes. It's my final semester. And I was just like trying to figure out, I'm like, okay, I and I was talking to my mom about it, and she was going through like some financial issues and stuff like that. And so I was like, let me see if I can get like, you know, I think it was like a approval or something, like where I can get like the max amount of financial aid. And they said that I was like running low. So I didn't like really like, I kept calling, I kept going to financial aid. And I was like talking to my bosses at the Alumni Center in Trio. I was like, you know, is there any scholarships or anything like that? I don't know if I can say this, but I am also a first generation ambassador. The provost, he offers, you know, us at the end of the term a first gen ambassador like scholarship where we get money, where we have to complete our hours. And so I was like, let me see if I can like dip into that. And so I asked Sierra if there's any other Sierra Waller who's the director of my association. And so she said, let me call and see if I can do some like resources and stuff. And also Emily, Dr. Sales, and they told me about the Barnes & Noble scholarship. So they added that. Yeah, calling the Kentucky Federal Aid, they kept saying that I was running out of money. I used a lot of it while I was at community college. And since I did add it on a year and changed my major, so.
I guess I didn't realize that you could max out. I mean, that makes sense, but that never came to mind.
So with the Pell Grant, they're allowed 6 years worth of Pell Grant.
Okay.
And if they use summer term, that counts as a portion of one of the years. That's where students coming in are the most likely to exhaust those resources and then have that final semester or final year where they need that help to be able to finish from here.
So are we looking at, are we watching those students a little closer?
So we have a process in place that we can try.
We can't hear a word you're saying.
So we have a process in place where we track Pell eligibility usage. So PELLEU is what we refer to that. And those students come in with a flag from the federal government that lets us know that they're getting close to exhausting that. So then that's our indicator that we know that there is going to be a potential need there that we need to look for to try to help those students with opportunity funds, foundation funding, so forth.
And, you know, my concern is, does everybody know about this? You know, do you think it's well known? Every college knows about it. And can we use it on the regional campuses, you know?
We do use it on regional campuses. Those students benefit from this as well. All of the deans, so each college has their own opportunity fund actually set up within them for a specific amount that they have to work with at their discretion. And then from there, we try to educate every year and re-educate all of those advisors, everyone that's dealing with the students that will be in a place to hear from a student that says that they have a need. I would love it if they would all just come to us and start with us in financial aid and we can work them through the process. But sometimes they're just not comfortable doing that because each student's situation is a little bit different. So as we work through that, we do try to make sure that everyone across campus knows how to refer those students in for us. And there's quite a bit of information out on the web for those students where they can see that. And of course, they hear quite a bit about it even yesterday on the radio about the WPU Opportunity Fund.
And I will say it's not just people on campus. We have helped students who live off campus in various states, so it's not just students living here in Bowling Green.
I have something to share. First of all, I would like to CJ make on Board of Regents, but I'd love to also first thank Dr. Comboni as well as Mrs. Comboni and all the people involved in creating this opportunity fund, and kudos to Leia, I believe.
Yes.
If I have your name wrong, please forgive me. It not only takes people to build these resources, but it also takes the students to have the passion, the drive, and the determination to seek out these opportunities. Go ask people the way you did, because some, unfortunately, just give up and think I can't go any further. But I love the fact that you persisted, you asked teachers, you went around, you did all you could, and look at you now. So thank you so much for everyone who created the Opportunity Fund, but we also have to share it for the ones who are in need, that they also have to know how to ask and find out where to go get information where they can get help.
Can I just add, so like a lot of like community transfer students and a lot of like first generation and first year like freshmen and stuff like that, they do like get confused on like who to ask, who can they go to. And so like in my row with the first gen initiatives, we try to implement a lot of these like, hey, you can come to, you know, the financial aid office, you can go to Dr. Sales, MLI, you can talk to Sierra and April McCauley, and they can like help you get connected with
you know, these scholarships, help, resources, going out for office hours, meeting with your deans, and I just think that that can also be like an issue. Like a lot of students just don't know because they didn't have that career path, they didn't have that help with the with their parents because they weren't like in college and stuff like that. So they had to push this on their own. So I just always learned that I always had to advocate for myself, and I do enjoy that. So that's what I'm looking to continue for my master's after I graduate from student affairs.
Good for you. Thank you.
Bryson, has any of this been used for children or for students to study abroad? Or would that be felt to be?
Well, that's not necessarily an emergency need. By my definition,
yeah.
And I think
well, it
could but we have so many other opportunities for those students to receive funding, even externally from the university, outside of the university, for those purposes. So we have a whole team of people that work with them specifically to help them find those resources to be able to find the money to study abroad. So we're not necessarily using the opportunity fund for that. If we ever had an emergency situation that we had to do something real quick, we probably could. I remember once I had a student that was in China and they had forgot to buy their ticket to come home, and so we did have to try to help that student at one point. Yeah, that was interesting. That was several years ago, and that was before the opportunity fund was even around.
Glad you got them home.
Yeah, we did. We got them home.
And then, so are people contributing every year to this fund, Amanda?
Yes, people still make gifts for scholarships. While the Opportunity Fund initiative campaign is over, we're still very much actively raising for scholarship support.
Anybody else have any questions? Yeah, I've been interested in this Opportunity Fund, and I'm glad. Thank you for it. And I'm sure that the needs are needs and money always, but just to be the place where we can do the best for our students. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for encouraging and try to get other students just to ask. You know, I think that there's lots of options for people, but they just don't.
Dr. Dennison, I must say we are so blessed to be a part of a university that puts such an impetus on students like Ms. Guest. I'm fortunate enough to know her in a few different capacities, and it's money well spent. That's,
yes.
Yes. But I just feel so privileged to be a part of this, be a very small part of this. Thank you, Ms. Essler. I know you work with students so often and so in-depth, and so we appreciate that. Dr. Sales, we appreciate her, absolutely. Dr. Cavone, we appreciate you. And we appreciate yes. students like you, absolutely.
Yes, thank you, absolutely. Dr. Cavone, and thank you to your wife, Casey Cavone. I was able to meet with her at the First Generation Leadership Conference, and I thank her for that opportunity. So, thank you.
If I may, this is why we do the work, and it's why I come to work every day, and it's why Casey works so hard, and you know, I appreciate sometimes people mistake the work for being about big numbers or headcount. And the reality is we have intervention after intervention that we've created focused on students and getting them to graduation. That's why we're here. We're not here to grow the first year class. We're here to grow the number of graduates. No matter your economic background, no matter who your parents were, no matter where you come from, if we're going to admit you, we want you to graduate. And I'm so thankful for your willingness to share. We should all be proud of that and who we are as an institution.
All right, well, thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the best part of the meeting.
That was wonderful. Thank you. Now we have the executive committee and we have the legislative update from Jennifer Smith.
Well, I'm sorry I have to follow that.
Great job and congratulations to everyone. So Fred and I were talking the other day and thought it would be beneficial to go ahead and give you all a legislative update, even though there's not a whole lot to say right now. But this group won't be back together until the session is over. So I just wanted to have an opportunity to talk to you all, give you an opportunity to ask me questions and that sort of thing. So if you all are good, I'm just going to dive right into this. I'm going to do the budget last. So just know I'm going to get through some of this other stuff because I figure the budget is where you all probably would have the most questions. So surprisingly, all of the post-secondary bills are House bills. So far, there are no Senate bills that are directly impacting post-secondary education. Some things on like insurance and things like that, but we're working on that. Quinn is keeping me updated on all the things I need to know. So House Bill 307, this is we're calling it proactive admissions for lack of a better term. So this is an idea that's been kind of thrown around for a few years. But this bill is still going through a lot of changes. It is out of the House Education, Post-Secondary Education Committee. It is to the floor, but there are still floor amendments being filed on this, trying to work between the universities, the Council on Post-Secondary Education, and the Kentucky Department of Education. But the overall idea of this would be that universities would be provided with directory level information on Kentucky's high school students so that we can be contacting them, letting them know, hey, here's your opportunities after high school. And this would be every university plus KCTCS, public universities. There's the changes that we're seeing is who sends those notifications out. So you've got directory level information, which is one thing. But then on top of that, the students would have to opt in to the proactive admissions program. And that is where they would be saying, I am giving permission for the Kentucky Department of Education, my school district, to share my GPA and my test scores with the universities. It is not an opt-out, it is an opt-in. And that is because of FERPA and things like that. The students and the parents have to say, I want my child to be part of this. And so while the universities would have directory level information, what we really need are those GPA and test scores so that we know you really do meet our minimum requirements to come to WKU. And so we would be required to send notifications to all of these students saying you meet the minimum requirement. This is not direct admissions. This does not mean you meet these requirements, you're automatically a WKU student. This is, you meet the requirements, now you need to apply. And we would be able to provide them with information on scholarships and financial aid and just kind of all the things that would help them to become successful. And because what we're seeing is that there are so many students in Kentucky that just don't do anything after high school, that are qualified and that can be successful, but maybe they don't realize they are, or no one's ever really pushed the idea of post-secondary education. And so this is something that was actually brought to us by the two chairmen in the House and the Senate that said, we really want to do this and we want the universities to work with us on how do we make this happen. So I wish that I had exact specifics on how all of this is going to work, but since that bill is still seeing some floor amendments filed to it and things, We'll see which floor amendments stick and which ones don't and how that works moving forward. But I do not envy the bill sponsor having to work with the university CPE and KDE to try to make all of this work as one. That's a lot of moving pieces. So hopefully we will know something a little bit more, hopefully next week, on what this is really going to look like. But I think it's exciting for Kentucky students. So the next one is House Bill 490. This is titled Employment at Post-Secondary Universities. If you all will recall back, did we do this in the summer? I can't remember. You all had to approve our faculty evaluation process and the presidential evaluation processes, our process. So this bill goes just a little bit further. And it allows for the removal of faculty for bona fide financial reasons. Now, I think something that is very important for you all to understand is that we already have something not identical, but very close to this in our faculty handbook. And so this does not say that we have to do things this way, but it gives universities, some universities don't have the language that we have in our faculty handbook in theirs. And so it gives the universities another tool in case there is any kind of financial reasons to maybe have to remove a program or financial exigency of some sort, that sort of thing. And so that one is out of the House and over into the Senate now. But if it does pass and become law, it says that the board has to establish the process based on financial reasons and approve that. I think we have probably already done that, but you might have to just do it one more time. We'll kind of see how that happens and if this goes through any more changes in the Senate. So just know that that's out there. House Bill 497, so Regent Bell, this goes to your question about tuition waivers and what that looks like. So right now, I believe it's only one tuition waiver statute requires the student to fill out the FAFSA. None of the rest of them do. So House Bill 497 would require any student that would be applying for to use their tuition waiver, they would have to fill out their FAFSA first, which would ultimately make the tuition waiver the last dollar in. Because a lot of times, a lot of these federal funds and state funds, they're just being left on the table because the students don't realize that they qualify for them. If they don't qualify for any, then you just get the tuition waiver. But this is just one step that the student will have to take in filling out the FAFSA. There is the one tuition waiver that already requires this is the foster and foster to adopted children. And so for them, that would not change because that's already a requirement. There is a floor amendment on this bill that would cap the number of undergraduate hours that a student could use their tuition waiver to 128 hours, which will get you your bachelor's degree for the most part. And it would also cap the age to 26. So right now there's really no requirement in there. It's just kind of open-ended. You can use it whenever you want. And so the students would have until they're 26 years old to use that. Now, that is just a floor amendment that has not passed yet. That is still in the House. But I do expect that floor amendment to be attached to this bill.
Military included?
Yes.
That would be capped at 26?
Yes. To make it all kind of universal across the board. And that was not our recommendation. I will just say that.
So you can get a tuition waiver, like the thing where we give anyone over 65 like the opportunity to have free tuition, that would be?
Well, so 65 and older is different. Mm-hmm. That one is different. And the floor amendment, what it does in there is it caps them to 8 hours a semester, so basically as part-time of a tuition waiver that they would receive. But they would still have to fill out the FAFSA, but obviously the 26-year age cap would not apply to them because in the statute it's for 65 and older. You're welcome. All right, so then we're on to the budget. So House Bill 500. I did send an email out to campus shortly after the budget was introduced, which Beth did forward on to the regents. When Chairman Petrie introduced the budget on the House floor, he did say, this is a bare bones budget. This is a starting point. And in the past, the budget review subcommittees, the one for post-secondary education was always used pretty well. I mean, we always came to testify and gave, you know, explain what our needs were for the university. A lot of the other budget review subcommittees did not do that as much as post-secondary did. And so the idea was to make this more public, more transparent, have the state agencies come before those budget review subcommittees and present their needs for funding. And so that was the whole idea behind a budget that looked pretty scary when it first came out. And so Chairman Petrie did say there will be a committee substitute on this bill. So as we see the budget right now, that is not final. The final budget won't be out until, well, it has to pass by April 1st, okay, so, to be veto-proof. So we've got a long, long time between now and April 1st to see what this is going to look like. President Cavone gave his budget review presentation yesterday. That went exceptionally well. We had some really great questions, really great feedback from the committee. And then we spent all day, I had him in meetings just constantly all day yesterday talking about the budget and our needs and that sort of thing. And I feel like all of those were very, very positive. Everyone understood why we need what we need. And so I feel very positive going forward. I don't know that the budget we will see come out of the House is going to have every single thing in it that we are asking for. But keep in mind, once it passes the House, it still has to go to the Senate. It goes through the same process in the Senate, and then it will come back to the House. They never concur on the budget, so just know that. Then they will go into conference committee, and that's when we will see the real final budget be produced. So I don't have sleepless nights yet, but, you know, that'll be for later. That'll be for March.
Jennifer, thank you, number one, for the work, but also for the update. I do want to share with the Regents what our priorities are that I testified to yesterday.
Absolutely.
So I'll do that quickly. Number one is an increase to the base appropriation. Number two, additional funding for performance funding. Number three, asset preservation dollars. Number four, maintaining funding for the Mezzanet. Number five, increased funding for Gatton Academy. Number six, a new facility for Potter College, moving everything out of Ivan Wilson Hall to the tune of $280 million. And then number five, last but not least, current year approval for a public-private partnership. So we're working all of those at the same time. We won't get everything, we never do, but we're going to get something.
Yes. We'll see what that is. Do you all have any questions for me?
So we'll, at the end of the session, will you give us the information since we're not going to be back till?
Yes.
Okay.
So there is, so I have a website, wku.edu/govrelations. And so weekly we update the bill tracking sheet on there so everyone can see all the legislation that we're following. Some of it you all might go, what in the world is she doing? It's because I think maybe this could be a vehicle for something else. And so some of it might seem a little odd. But then as there is a need for an update, which there just hasn't really been much to say in the past couple of weeks, I will do a weekly update on that site as well. And there's like a little news section, and that will be there. I don't do a weekly email to campus just because I don't want to overwhelm the campus. So it's there on the website so anyone can get on there and look at that at any time. But at the end of session, I will do a final update to campus, and that will go to the board as well.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. Very good. Chair West, I have one last thing before we would adjourn, if
okay.
I may. Beth, would you hand the documents out? Some of you may have seen that CPE announced an increased graduation rate for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And continuing with our theme today of student success and the importance of what we're doing, I wanted to remind everyone that sometimes some media outlets want to make news by looking at headcount. That's not the metric we're using to measure our success. What we're focused on is retention, graduation rates, and student success. So a reminder to the board, we have had the highest ever first to second year retention rate in the university's history. Record graduation rates, both 4 and 6 year. A record number of undergraduate degrees and credentials awarded in 2025. And if you look at the chart before, we produced the second largest number of undergraduate degrees and credentials in the Commonwealth, second only to the University of Kentucky. And that is our focus. And this is something we should celebrate. So thank you all.
Yes, absolutely. Great day.
Yeah, also, before we adjourn, first off, this is very exciting. secondly, regrettably, I will not be here quarterly. I want to take the opportunity to let you all know that I will not be here. I'm not playing hooky, but I have to walk across the street. I'm interviewing for the school psychology program, the EDS master's program here at WKU, and my interview is at 12:30, so I'll be sticking around for lunch. If you guys have any advice for me, please. Ears are open, but I'm not playing hooky, just across the street in an interview. Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. And with that, we are adjourned.